Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Good morning to you. It's about 8 minutes after 9 o'clock on this gorgeous Wednesday morning. Sun is out and shining brightly. What a beautiful, beautiful day. We get to 79 today, which is slightly above average. Steve Dunham is with me from the Washington County School District.
Hi,
Steve.
Good morning. It's a spectacular day. Love days like this.
Oh, yeah, man. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
In fact, later on, we got a group to getting together to play a little pickleball.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You're welcome to come if you want.
You know, I've been playing once a week, and I am slightly less lousy than I was several weeks ago.
You know, it's funny. My wife and I were talking about this. We've been playing about 5 years now. And sometimes you feel like if you play often, you feel like, I'm not getting any better. I'm just, you know, I've hit a wall. But if me today were to play 5 years ago, I would kick my butt.
Yo, there you go.
Or if they knew me.
If you today were to play me today, you would kick my butt.
Well, I have certain physical limitations. I don't run really well and stuff, but I can hit the ball. And yeah, it's great pickleball weather for sure.
That's good.
So Steve is here, of course, to talk about some of the stuff happening in school. Of course, maybe the biggest news last week was the swatting incidents when school wasn't in.
No.
Somebody called in and said there was an active shooter out at Hurricane. And I mean, obviously you can't talk about all the inside details on this, but there was no shooting. There was no. In fact, school wasn't in.
There were a handful of students in the building. There was an AP class that had come in and they were prepping with their AP teacher for an AP test, an upcoming test. So they came in on their day off. The teacher came in on her day off.
Which is really, really nice. Yeah.
I agree. Work with 23 students on their AP, their upcoming AP exams. And that is, you know, that's the commitment of this. And everybody handled it perfectly, you know. And so we had 23 students and six staff members in the building at the time of the incident. And the response was huge, and you know, you have to give praise to our first responders.
Yeah.
They take it seriously. They're going to come in, and they are going to make sure that they can get all of us home safely to our families, get every child home safely to their family. And I got to be honest with you, when I crested the hill in Hurricane, and you look down across the valley there towards the high school, and I can see all the lights. I was like, oh, uh-oh. Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. And then I get there on site, and you see that there is officers from Utah Tech. We had Zion National Park. We had every single police agency, including the FBI. All of them were there. The sheriff's department was there with their big command vehicle. It was a big response, and they took it seriously. And you know, I've had the special opportunity to hear the 911 calls, and I can see why they made that response that they did. And I also give credit to our dispatchers. Our dispatchers, that is a high-stress job.
Yeah.
They have to make split-second decisions where lives are on the line.
That's true.
And having listened to that call, I praise our dispatchers. That dispatcher made the right decision and sent the troops in, and the troops came. And boy, was it a great response. I mean, we jokingly now we can laugh and go, "Gal, we even had the dog catcher from New Harmony there," you know? But that's what you want when there's an incident like that. You want a response that comes in fast and clears the building and makes sure everybody's safe, because their goal is to get everybody home.
Well, and you know, I hate to even bring it up, but Uvalde, Texas still isn't, I think, even though it's been, over a year now, it's still fresh in people's minds.
You're right.
Because although the police reaction was swift, they then paused a long time. But we believe people died because they didn't get in there quick enough. And so kudos to our police departments here, all of them, it seems like, for responding to this and making sure everyone was safe. And thankfully, like you said, it was a hoax.
Yeah.
A bad hoax.
A bad hoax. And so, I have all kinds of words to say to those people that do those hoaxes.
Yeah.
You know, in the words of Buddy the Elf, they're a cotton-headed ninny muggins.
That is Steve editing what he really wants to say, which is very nice of you to do. We can only speculate the motivation behind why someone would do that. It was April Fool's Day. Maybe they thought it would be a really great April Fool's prank. Steve, I can't think of any other reason why someone would do that.
There's really no good reason. And I think I'm proud of our legislature taking the steps to enhance the penalties for things like this. If you look at that response, again, the decisions that were made to get all the resources there, that's tens of thousands of dollars of taxpayer dollars that responded to a couple of jerks that made some phone calls, you know? And so, yeah, there should be some significant penalties. There should be a pound of flesh given on that one.
Yeah. I want to ask you about a couple of things in the news the last couple of days.
Sure.
And maybe you don't have to answer specifically, probably because you don't know as many details.
Also, I should get my no comment ready. No comment.
But maybe just answer questions generally about these. This morning in the news, they are charging an administrator. I can't remember where it was. It's not in Utah. Because of that six-year-old that shot a teacher. Now, fortunately, she wasn't seriously injured, but she was shot by a six-year-old. When the teacher contends, she's the one actually that filed the lawsuit and everything, contend that the administrator should have caught this, that the student was clearly a danger. And I mean, you know, we're talking about a little kid. And then the other thing in the news was the parents of that shooter who killed four people have been sentenced to, I think it's 10 years in prison each for not doing enough to stop their son from shooting up a school. And to me, you know, you can comment whether you like these decisions or not and the big kind of picture behind it all. But really, I'm curious, what responsibility is there of the parents, number one, and of the administrators or teachers in a school when there is danger? How much should they be held accountable for?
Well, let me begin by saying every situation is different.
Yeah.
The situation with the six-year-old was very different from the situation with the teenager.
Right.
And my access to the information is limited to what you would have, the news sources. But right. I've read widely on those. And so let me say that in the incident of the six-year-old, I think there are times that... let me say it this way. I got to juggle this.
Okay.
We have policies and procedure in place for a reason. And if administrators will follow district policy on how to handle a situation like this, I think it will protect them from these type of incidences that may arise. In the case of the six-year-old, I don't believe all the policies and procedures were followed.
I agree. Yeah.
Which is why you have a situation like that. And that's with my limited knowledge, that's what I would surmise is taking place. Now, with the incident with the teenager and the parents being charged, again, there were a lot of mistakes, mostly on behalf of the parents,
right,
feeling entitled
right.
to, no, we're going to do this. No, we're not going to do this. No, we're not going to take him home. No, we're not going to, you know. And parents need to step up and have some responsibility and help us out here. We can't do this alone. There are so many laws in place that say, hey, it's a parent's right. And parents do have the rights to choose. And we support that. We want that. But as parents, sometimes we need you to look at the situation with your own child and say, hey, is everything up front? Are you telling me the whole story here? You know, because we're sure trying from our side as a district to investigate completely, to make sure that we have all of the facts before we bring you in. Work with us. For crying out loud, work with us. And in that situation, I don't think the parents worked with the school and the district very well there.
One thing that came out on that case was that they had called the parents in. The parents, the student, and the administrators met together. During this time, the student actually had a gun inside his backpack. They never searched the backpack. They never looked into that. And, you know, it's one of those deals where Steve, like, man, how could they not even look?
I can't speak to that. Again, you have policies in place. And you hope that everybody follows those. We have the benefit here where we have a school resource officer in all of our secondary schools. And that adds an additional level of procedure in place. As a law enforcement officer, they can take steps to do what they need to do to ensure the safety of the kids. I don't know if they had that there. Right. But I can say that that is an extra measure we have put in place in all of our secondary schools, which I think does add an added layer of security for our children.
Do you think, Steve, someday there will be a day where we have, like in Las Vegas, metal detectors in the entrance to schools and the entrance to sporting events, things like that? Is that going to become necessary someday, do you think?
It's possible. I'm not going to say never, you know. It happens, and there's some communities where they evolve over time and things change.
Yeah.
And so, you can't say never. I mean, look at where we've come to this point. When you and I went to school, there were kids that drove with a gun rack and a gun in it.
Oh, yeah.
In the parking lot.
Oh, yeah. And we didn't think twice about
it. No, it was no big deal, you know, especially during the hunts, right? Yeah. Before fall recess.
Mm-hmm.
It was, hey, deer hunt's coming up. And kids were ready. They were ready to get out and go and enjoy themselves and do their thing. And so that is such a big shift where never, never on school grounds would we ever allow that again.
Yeah. Sad times, but realistically, we need to be careful. Need to protect our kids and make sure. There was one other news story. This is kind of a side news story, but it was announced that a school resource, and again, this is not Utah. This is, this one I think was in like New Mexico or something, but I don't even remember where. School resource officer, instead of confronting a shooter, actually hid and stayed away from the confrontation. That SRO has been he's been relieved of duty, but he's also the lawsuit was dismissed, saying they really have no proof that he was derelict in his duty. But that's one of those. I know some SROs here in the air. We've had them on the show. I don't think any of those guys would hide if there was a confrontation. I think they would be the first ones there to say, "I got to stop this."
I think you're right. Our school resource officers go through a significant amount of training, best practices on how to respond. From a district side, we are trying to provide them with the tools necessary so they have the capability to respond quickly to a threat and make it safe for our students. Along with that, I would dare say that is one of the hardest jobs in law enforcement because they have to come to school every day, be friends with these kids, knowing that one day they may have to not be a friend to that child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. They may have to shoot a child. They may have to. They may be
or
put in a situation.
Or turn them in or whatever.
Yeah. And that's tough to be able to come every day and greet the kids as they're walking in the door, greet them by name in a lot of instances, because our SROs do. They know the kids' names. They get to know them. Yeah. And they get to know the ones with the biggest challenges. And they may have to confront them in a whole different environment the very next day. That's a tough mind shift.
We hope and pray in southern Utah, none of this stuff that's happened in other places, school shootings and bombs and things like that ever happens here. I know you're doing everything possible to make sure it doesn't. But like you said, the world has changed. The world is just changing every day. Our community is even changing every day. So never say never.
As far as swatting incidents go, Hurricane was a bad situation and also good because we learned. We still learn from these things. We learn things we can do as a district. Law enforcement learns things they can do. They treat it as a real situation. And from our side, it was really, really positive. And when we see the response, the rapid response from
2 minutes, wasn't it?
From throughout the community, they were into that school quick and they were looking to save lives. It was, it's very reassuring. Yeah. And our parents should be reassured at the training that goes into our law enforcement officers to protect lives.
Any idea, you probably don't know because they probably don't let you in on this kind of thing, but any idea on if they've made any progress in figuring out who made these dumb phone calls?
No idea. No. I can't speak to that at all.
Yeah, well, I hope they figure it out.
Yeah, they will. They will. Stupid. They're good. They're good investigators. They'll figure it out.
I know there are a couple of things you wanted to talk about, really positive, cool things.
Yes.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with kindergarten, shall we?
Okay.
Kindergarten kickoff is coming up on April 17th.
Now, what does that mean?
That means that every parent with a child going into kindergarten next year,
okay,
can visit their boundary school and meet their kindergarten teacher. They have an hour from 6 to 7 p.m. on the 17th. They'll meet their teachers, their administrators. They'll see the classroom. They'll get a free kindergarten starter pack. We're really excited about this. We're trying to get those kids excited about coming to school. And we started this a year or two ago, and it's something that has worked really well to get the kids excited about. And, oh, this is my teacher. Oh, this is my classroom. Look at all the colors. Look at all the things we're going to learn. They get a starter pack. It's just really a fun, non-threatening environment or keep the anxiety levels low. That's the whole goal, reduce those anxiety levels. So kindergarten kickoff coming Wednesday, April 17th, 6 to 7 p.m. at your boundary school.
A week from today.
Yes. And so that's a big one. That's a fun one.
Now, I don't know if you remember this, Steve, when you're, especially the oldest, when you take your oldest to school for the very first time. And this is just a kickoff. This is not the first day of school we're going to have in the fall. But I remember taking my oldest to school for the first time. That was traumatic.
Oh, yeah, for that the parents.
Oh, man.
And here's the thing. Parents, please keep in mind, it's harder on you than it is on them.
Oh, yeah.
And let us do our thing. Let us take them into the building. Your kids are going to recover like that in a snap. They're going to be great, and they're going to have a great day, and we're going to make sure it's fun. When they see mom or dad having emotional challenges with the day, it sets them off because they're concerned, and it makes them a little bit scared, a little bit nervous.
So don't lose it until you're out of sight.
Exactly. Turn your back. Maybe get in the car. Have your break down there. We'll provide extra tissues for you in the parking lot, but it is hard, and we get that.
There's a similar experience for parents who send a kid on a mission, for parents who send their kids off to college. I remember taking my oldest to serve a mission, and it's the same kind of thing. You don't want to let them know
at the time
that you're upset. So they have like this parking lot area after you drop them off where you can pull over into a parking spot and lose it.
That's right. I admit it. I was part of that. So,
yeah, me too. So, kindergarten kickoff a week from tonight, 6 o'clock at your whatever school your kid is
whatever
going to
school.
Be attending.
Yeah, take your child. Take that opportunity to let them see the school, let them meet their principal and their teacher, and to really realize, hey, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a great opportunity.
If I recall, and I don't know if this has changed or not, but I do remember also right before school starts, you actually have you take your kindergartner in for like an assessment test.
That's
right?
Correct.
Get them ready for to figure out where they're at.
That's it exactly. Our teachers do best when they know where your child is. And then that's why we do assessments. It's not to punish kids. It's not to penalize kids. It's so that our teachers can see how is this child progressing in the stuff I'm required to teach. State law requires we teach certain amount of things every year. We want to get a year's worth of improvement for a year's worth of instruction at least. Yeah. And sometimes we get more than that. Rarely we get less than that, but we really try hard to do that. And it's these assessments that let us know where we stand. And that beginning of year assessment for kindergartners is very important, especially because we have no history on this child. We have no idea where they are with their letters and their numbers and everything. And we can really make some groundbreaking achievements. As we have in the past, our kindergartners have really improved on their literacy, on their numeracy.
It's true.
Yes.
It's true. I watched my kids go through it all.
Yeah.
For sure. After we take a break here in a minute, I want to talk a little bit about the uniqueness it takes to be a teacher.
Yeah.
The great impact teachers have on young people, or can have. Not always. Not every kid. Not every teacher. But the impact. We had a guy on earlier this week, Stephen. I'm not going to tell the story right now. I'm going to wait till after the break.
Okay.
Who was incredibly impacted by a second grade teacher, first or second grade teacher 50 years ago that to this day still gives her credit. And that's the kind of impact a teacher can have.
That's the truth. That is the truth.
And that's why it takes a special kind of personality and person to be a really good teacher.
And that's why they're willing to do it for really not a tremendous amount of compensation.
Yeah,
it's because of that side benefit of seeing the growth, making that connection with kiddos.
Yeah, if you've never, I will say that, if you've never taught someone and then witnessed as they grasped what it is you're trying to teach them, that the feeling you get when that happens is almost unmatched in this world that we have.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. So we're going to talk about that a little bit when we come back. Real quick, 1 minute, let's talk about the Enterprise football team.
Enterprise football team. No, basketball team.
Or basketball, sorry.
Right? Basketball, yeah. Yes. Yeah. For the first time in 30 years, our Enterprise boys basketball are the state champions.
Nice.
And so it was 1994 was the last time they brought that trophy home to the school. And so, we want to give a big shout out to our Enterprise Wolves.
Who's their coach out there now?
I do not know.
Okay, we'll look it up.
The coach's name. Yeah, let's look that up. But we're very proud of them for this year for bringing that trophy home.
Congratulations to them. When I first moved to the area, Enterprise was part of the group that played fall baseball. They didn't play football. They did have a basketball team, but things have changed a little bit. They're growing up a little bit. Now they play football and obviously play basketball.
And they're very competitive in what they do. They're a great school. They got some great students up there, and so we're proud of what they do.
Way to go, Enterprise. All right, we are going to give away a book. It's called American Playbook by Clay Travis. If you give me a call right now, 673-5890, 435-673-5890, 435-673-5890, American Playbook by Clay Travis. We'll give one away right now. Just give us a call. Stockton will answer your phone. We'll give away one of those. But we have three left, so now's your chance. Maybe almost your last chance to get one of those books.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, welcome back. We're talking schools and students and teachers and stuff today with Steve Dunham from the Washington County School District. Hi, Steve.
Thanks. Hello. Good morning.
Appreciate you, man.
I'm thrilled to be here. I like coming and visiting you.
Steve has been coming. How long have you been coming to do this show?
It's been a couple of years.
I've been here. I've been doing the show over 5 years. 5 years and 2 months. Have you been coming the whole time?
Not the whole time you've been here. I mean, you were here a little bit before I started. So okay. I would have guessed it's like 2019, 2020. I don't know.
Was there
I never.
Who had your job before you?
Nobody.
No, they didn't have it. They created the job. How cool is that?
I know. Well, we're a growing district, and so we've gotten bigger. But I think Terry kind of did it for us as he became a board member in 2017.
Yeah.
And used to talk pretty regularly about the district and what's happening. And so it kind of grew with board members Hutchinson coming.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Glad you've been coming the last few years.
Yeah, sure.
And you do a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One other thing, want to talk preschool for a minute, and then we'll talk about teachers and personalities and impact and stuff.
Yeah, so the latest numbers are out, and we have a preschool program that is at various schools throughout Washington County.
Okay, so not every school.
A few. But exactly. And the goal is to provide early intervention for children that may have special needs and for just regular children. And so we mix them together so that you have regular children with some special learning challenges, and they're learning together. Our preschool program is the absolute best in the state.
Really?
We are seeing higher marks of improvement in students learning. And it's, again, we do assessments even at the preschool level so we can gauge where students are with knowing their letters, knowing their numbers.
So how young are we talking here?
We're talking 3 and 4 years old.
Okay.
And these kids are coming out of our preschool with a higher assessment than any other preschool program in the entire state of Utah. And that, again, that speaks to what I think you want to talk about, the value of our teachers. They care about these kids. They're so invested in helping them learn and seeing that light bulb go on, seeing the excitement that comes from learning. And they're making such a difference. And it's really exciting to see, Andy.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Now, what percentage of kids are going to preschool? Obviously, it's not a required course, but can parents opt in? Does it cost some money? How many would you recommend? All that stuff.
Okay. No, it does not cost money. No, they can't opt in. They have to apply for it because we only have a limited number of spots available because it really is geared towards helping the children with learning disabilities, with special needs to be socialized with a regular education student and learn together. And that's the goal of the program.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that's the goal of the program, but that's how the program is developed and how we've seen such spectacular results.
So is it maybe 10% of kids or less?
Oh, man, I don't know enrollment in preschool. I want to say it's about 2,000, but you can't quote me.
Big.
But I can follow up and let you know.
Okay.
Because that's the joy of my position is I always know who to ask to get those answers, and I can let you know exactly where it is. So if it's about 2,000, that's a little less than 10% of our student body.
Okay. I did want to address this text. Somebody said, and by the way, congratulations to Mardine for winning the book. The text is, ask what the punishment is for these fake calls. We were talking earlier about the swatting incident. But somebody called two different people or two different calls anyway about a shooting in Hurricane on April Fool's. It was not a shooting. We had big time, obviously, police response, but because there was nothing there, because it was all fake, people want to know what is the punishment if they do eventually catch these people.
Well, I don't know what it currently is, but I know in this last legislative session, our state elected officials passed a new law enhancing the penalty for swatting incidents. And it goes up to, I believe it starts May 1, and it becomes a second-degree felony. That includes possible prison time, significant fines, all of that. It is really enhanced, and I support that fully.
Do you know if they build in a recompense, paying back what all it costs on that?
I don't know all those specifics. You would think they would, but I honestly don't know. And obviously, if you're a minor, that financial responsibility falls to the parents. So what we're saying here is, parents, you need to take responsibility for your children. Mm. Make sure you know what they're doing, and don't let them dink around on the phone like this.
I'm not going to lie. When I was a kid, and they told me, look, if you do something stupid, if you vandalize a sign or if you break something, your parents are going to have to pay for it. That was actually a motivator to me as a kid, because I did not want my parents to be mad at me because, you know, they had to pay for a new, you know, window or whatever.
That's right.
By the way, if you want to text, 467-5842 is my text line here. That's a 435 area code, and then 467-5842. All right, we had Gary Lee Price, who's an internationally renowned sculptor, on earlier this week. Gary, he wrote a book, and in the book he chronicles when he was a young child, a sad thing happened to him. His stepdad was in the military. They were in Germany, so on the military base housing area. And his stepdad and his mom got in a big fight. The stepdad stormed out angry. His mom, you know, 6 years old, mind you. His mom came to him and said, what do I do? I don't know what to do. You know, and imagine a six-year-old and your mom is coming to you for advice after this big fight. He said he told, and this was wee hours in the morning, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. He said to his mom, he said, well, just lock the door and don't let him come back. So she took him back. She did that, and she took him back to bed. And sadly, when an hour or so later, he heard some loud noises, and sadly, his stepdad killed his mom and killed himself, and he was the one that had to kind of walk in.
Oh, God.
So anyway, very sad story, but he was then, I guess, farmed out to a family member who lived in Idaho. And you imagine, you know, within the next year or so, you just kind of going through it all and everything. But they enroll him in school, and he said, I will never forget the impact a teacher had on me. And I'm thinking first grade, maybe something like that. But he said this teacher, who knew about my past, knew a lot about me, decided that because I was a budding artist, that she was going to, every time I did, you know, in first grade, you're doing a lot of drawing of pictures and things like that. He said every time that I drew a picture, she would take the picture and say, "Hey, look, everybody, look what Gary drew. Isn't this amazing? He's such a great artist." And he said, you know, that was, you know, Gary's like almost 60 now, so that was 50 plus years ago. And he said the impact of that moment was still felt today. Mm-hmm. And he's an artist and a sculptor, an internationally renowned sculptor, and in part because of this impact his teacher had on him. She knew he had some issues, social issues that he had to sort through. But the fact that she was able to lift him up a little bit, mm-hmm. and at that time of his life, had such a long-lasting impact on him. And, you know, I think you and I could probably both go back and we can pick out a moment in time where a teacher had some kind of really profound impact on who we were then and who and maybe lasted until now, who we are now.
Oh, yeah.
And it to me, it just brings to light the fact that teachers are the teachers that are doing it right, and again, it's not a perfect world. Not every teacher is perfect. But teachers that are doing it right really do have a profound impact on young people.
They truly do.
Yeah.
They truly do. You know, they more than teaching our children, oftentimes teachers give hope.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in this story you described.
Yeah.
She gave hope to a child that maybe had none at that point in his life.
Right.
And you look at where he's come. He's this internationally renowned sculptor and artist, all because of that moment of pride as the teacher said, "Hey, look at what Gary did. Look at this amazing piece of art." And that was something that stuck with him and maybe inspired him and gave him hope.
Yeah.
When all was dark,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, really
she
dark,
she was
yeah.
a light in, that, you know, helped him out.
There was, unfortunately, a story in the news yesterday in California. Heartbreaking story. So this lady kills her husband, I guess live-in husband. So what do they mm-hmm. call those? Not married, but
common law
husband.
Yeah.
Gets in her Porsche with her 9-year-old and her infant. Starts speeding on the freeway. Decides she wants to kill herself in her car. But we don't know the reasoning behind her, what she was thinking, but she decides she doesn't want her kids to be in the car when she does this. So instead of stopping and getting them out, she throws them out of the moving car. Sadly, it killed the infant, but the 9-year-old was only moderately injured. This lady then drives into a tree, purposely into a tree at 100 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after Gary had told that story to me, the sculptor, I'm thinking about this poor 9-year-old girl now and the fact that she lost her younger siblings, she lost her mom, and she lost her her dad,
mm-hmm.
All in one fell swoop. And I'm thinking, man, I hope there is someone that has an impact on this 9-year-old's life that can help her kind of, I don't know, lift her up from what is going to be a very dark place for a while.
Well, if you look at the public education system, you know, I hear so many people say, if I ran my business like you run public education, my business would fail. But the fact is in a private business, you can choose the quality of products you're bringing in. You can choose how you're building your product.
True.
In public education, we cannot choose the quality of students that are coming into our system. No. We take every single child that comes to us. We take children from so many different situations. They come to us battered, bruised, beaten. They come to us with dark, dark histories. And some of them do come to us really good, too, with two-parent households, very loving. I'm not saying every child in public education comes to us with a horrific story, but we have many that do have a horrible story, a horrible backstory that would make, you know, a miserable Hallmark movie, if you wanted. Yeah. And yet we take them all and we try and find a place for them. We try and find a place where we can help teach them the correct behavior in a school, because we have to start out on some kids with some foundational principles. Proper behavior in a school, proper behavior with others. And then once we get those, then we can work on the education side of things. Then we can work on some of these other things. But we do have to start somewhere that is often outside of the realm of just teaching letters and numbers.
Right.
And these teachers do that because they care about kids. They care about making a difference. They care about making society a better place. I'm sorry if I'm on a soapbox, but yeah, our teachers, they give a damn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they care about what they do, and they're passionate about it.
What do you do, and this is a hard question, Steve, but what do you do with when you have a teacher, someone comes along, and they have all the academic requirements. They've done everything they can to become a teacher, but they just don't have whatever that it is that we're talking about that is going to inspire students. Is it something that they can learn and eventually
yes.
develop, or is it something that they just don't have it. We got to get them out.
No, it is something they can learn and develop. And we have professional development for teachers on a regular basis. Mm. And we have coaches that work with them in the schools. We have learning coaches in the school, which aren't for the kids. They're for the teachers. Mm. And they work with best practices. We do professional development as groups, as grade levels, as subject levels. So we have our sixth grade math teams that will work together and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what is working well. This is what I learned at this most recent conference. And we have, they'll sit in those same groups and they'll say, hey, I am really struggling with student X or student Y. And they will discuss strategies and say, hey, this is what I've done over my 30-year career that has worked really well. And then this other teacher who only has 3 or 4 years in their career goes, oh, thank you. I needed that guidance on how to do that. Yeah. And then they put it into practice. We're constantly doing professional development. And we're constantly working with our teachers. And again, there are some that it may still not click with. And usually they will find that out on their own and realize that they can do something that is more suited to what their needs are. But we'd really try hard to provide a safe work environment for our staff because we want them there. We want them to help these kids. We recognize that these kids are going to be our future leaders, our future community members. Yeah. They're going to be the ones doing the small businesses here in St. George and raising St. George into what it's going to be for the next generation.
Well said. All right, guys, a quick commercial break in. A couple of things to talk about when we come back, including the RISE test. What does that mean? There was a recent post on St. George Word of Mouth with hundreds of comments already. We'll talk about that when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Andy, 953 on KDXU, running low on time. If you want to text 467-5842, if you want to call 673-5890 is the phone number. Steve Dunham is with me today as we discuss schools. There was a post up on St. George Word of Mouth, Steve, about the RISE test. What is a RISE test and what does it mean?
So the RISE test was implemented by the state. That's a required test by the state legislature, and that's a test they use to grade both our schools and our teachers. And so it's kind of a trick. We're required to do it. We're required to show that, hey, you've given us this money from the state for the year to educate children. We need to prove that we've educated them according to these benchmarks for each grade level. So okay. RISE stands for Readiness, Improvement, Success, Empowerment.
I was going to ask you what that stood for. I'm glad you got the phone out because I don't think I would remember.
No, that. I wouldn't have remembered it either because they keep changing the name. And so now it's RISE. But the fact is that it does show a benchmark of, hey, we are, you know, essentially three-fourths and almost 90% through the school year at this point. Let's assess the children, see what they've learned. Have they learned everything they need to for their grade level? And that's what the test is about. So this test reflects upon the teachers. It reflects upon the schools. This is a lot of times how the schools get their letter grades. And then we have a lot of parents that choose to opt out. So that affects the letter grade a school might have from the state. That will affect how they'll judge teachers from the state and things of that nature. And so, you know, it's a parent's right to choose if they want to do it or not. It is important that it's an assessment that helps our teachers gauge how students have learned.
Let me ask you this. Now, we have the curriculum, things they have to, they're yes. required to teach over the course of a year.
Yes.
And then you have the RISE test, which crosses over into curriculum and stuff. Do teachers, though, sometimes teach to the RISE test? Are they? Is their goal to get you to get a good grade on the RISE test? Is that something that happens, and is it something that you encourage?
No, that's not something we encourage, because we're trying to get a true factual knowledge about what the kids know.
Right.
And so the more important assessments are the regular assessments that your student will get in language arts or in math or in science or whatever it might be. Has your child learned the curriculum that was taught over the last couple of weeks? Those are the really important ones for us, because that's where a teacher can see the improvement and can see, oh, I need to reteach this, or this student needs additional help on this subject matter. And so is it important? Yes. Do some teachers possibly do that? It's possible. But that's why we try to encourage our elected officials to not assign bonuses towards a RISE result, because there's so many variables. You're teaching for an entire year's worth of education, and you're teaching all these variables where parents can opt out of different pieces of subject matter. They can opt out of testing. They can opt out. Parents can opt out. And again, we support that. However, then don't put it to a bonus or any of that stuff, because then teachers will try to start teaching to the test.
And we don't want them to do that.
Yeah, we don't want them to do that. We want a true assessment and a true understanding of how children are progressing.
Now, you mentioned opting out a couple of times. A lot of the comments on this, I mean, over, like I said, over 100 comments, a lot of the comments are, well, it creates too much stress on my child, I'm going to opt out. Number one, how do you feel about that statement? And number two, you touched on a little bit, but opting out seems like, I don't know, just
it's a scapegoat.
Like a bad idea.
It's a scapegoat. In a lot of cases, it's a scapegoat. The example I'll give is a very personal one. I have a child with a significant amount of anxiety, has really struggled in one subject. And so as parents, we have chosen to opt them out of just the one subject.
Okay.
However, they're continuing, because it's good that that child gets pushed in some other areas. It's okay for our children to get pushed a little bit. It's okay for our children to experience a little bit of stress, because in life we face stress, and children need to learn the tools to cope with stress and manage stress in their lives. Because for heck's sakes, Andy, have you had a little bit of stress in your life?
Just a little bit.
A little bit. And if we don't teach our own children how to manage and what tools they can use to cope with stress, we're failing them at home. And so that's what I'm doing with my child. I'm not saying that's perfect for everybody. And there are situations where you may want to opt your child out of all of the subject tests for RISE. I understand that. I'm not saying that as a blanket statement. But for me, we have chosen to opt them out of one subject where they have significantly struggled, and where we know that it will not benefit them because of how this year has gone.
And I'm with you on the, you know, kids need to be exposed to stuff. And
yes.
So much, I think my generation started it, but it's continued and gotten worse and worse and worse, of parents trying to protect their kids from everything.
That's true.
And you've got to let your kids have struggles. You've got to let your kids have stress, anxiety, because if they don't deal with it now, they don't learn how to deal with it now, it's going to dog them the rest of their lives.
Kids need to be able to fall down. Yeah. They need to be able to fail, because they learn. They will learn from those. And yes, it's hard as a parent. We cannot save them from everything.
Right. Right.
We want to. Yes. And I'm guilty of that too. I recognize, I say that here in this setting, and yet I know people can look at me and go, oh, dude, come on. and I get that, you know? Yeah. But we all work at our own pace, but as best you can, you know?
Yeah. We need our kids. And I mean,
they need to be more resilient.
No one protects us as professionals as we get to be adults.
There's
struggles. Every single day I have a struggle with maybe my GM or whoever it is. But the fact of the matter is, I've got to deal with it. It's life.
That's right.
That's life. Our kids are going to have to deal with stuff. That's life.